Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, Occupy Central Valley, we will take a look at what is behind the movement and what protesters hope to accomplish, and the California State University system in crisis. Students and faculty speak out as administrators call for the elimination of some departments. And keeping your city clean, starting with Highway 99. We talked to a volunteer from Bakersfield who wants to spread the movement to Fresno. But first, Occupy Fresno and Bakersfield. Both movements are small but vocal, and appears that despite a repeated arrest of members here in Fresno, the movement has staying power. Who are they? What do they hope to accomplish? We will talk to Joseph Hunter with Occupy Fresno, Sam Lujan, Occupy Bakersfield, and Jared Newhouse with Occupy Bakersfield. Let's start with Sam Lujan. Or Jared, are either one of you with us today?
Yes. Good morning, Juanita.
Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
This is Sam Lujan.
Hi, Sam. If you could, tell me a little bit about your movement in Bakersfield. When you're in a smaller city like that, what do you do to try to really make it relevant for the people there?
Well, really, it's like you said, it's about staying power. It's about sticking to our goals and always being out there. It's about putting in the time so that, you know, people that pass by the same road all the time always see you there, and they know that these people are dedicated. They're not just some cause I took up for the day or for the week, but it's something we're really in for the long haul, every single one of us. So, really, it's about awareness. It's about, you know, letting people know that you're not the only one that feels this way. Other people feel this way too, and we're here if you want to join us.
About how many active people do you say you have from day to day, or really is it the fact that the numbers really don't matter to you?
Well, any time we can have between 10 and 30 people. We've had as many as 110 people on any day, but you know, like some days are less than others. We have as little as 8 people. So it varies. It varies from day to day, depending on the day of the week and what the weather's like sometimes.
Well, you know, really, what motivated you to get involved in this movement?
Really, it's a movement of compassion. You know, like a lot of political leaders are talking about Christian values, and they want to turn around and cut Medicare and Social Security. And, you know, a lot of us in this movement, you know, everybody has problems of their own, but, you know, for the most part, some of us are well off, but there's still, it's a movement of compassion. We see that there are a lot of people in our community that are hurting. There's a lot of people below the poverty line that just seem to be ignored. And even if you talk to them, they're untrusting of the system and people that want to help. And we're just here to let people know that we care and we can do something if we put ourselves together, if we band together, we can get something changed.
Well, you know, how do you feel when you hear people on the outside really talk about, you know, what is this movement? What do these people want? How are you able to define yourself?
You know, just like I said, it's about compassion. It's about having caring for your fellow man. You know, because a lot of people feel that nobody cares for them, and that's something we all feel strongly about, is that we need to help other people. And, you know, a lot of people do ask, what do you want? Well, I'll have one answer for you when we have only one problem to solve. But right now there's so many things going wrong, so many bad things out there that, you know, it's just a constant it's a constant battle on all kinds of different fronts.
Do you think you can have an impact?
I think we can, and I think we already are. I mean, our numbers grow almost nightly. Almost every night we see a new person, someone who said, I didn't know there was something going on. I didn't know people felt like I do. And if you watch the news, there's a group of senators, I believe, that are trying to make a new constitutional amendment that says corporations aren't people and money isn't free speech. There's other similar things coming out. They might fail at first, but I think people are hearing our message, and I think people are starting to say, hey, this is wrong, and we need to change this.
Do you think, how do you transform what you're doing? I mean, is there an effort to transform this really to the ballot box, which is where you make the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think going to the ballot box is going to be one of the next steps in the coming year for the Occupy movement. You know, most cities aren't camping anymore, but the dedicated people are still there. And one of the things people are talking about is getting people registered to vote, because there's a lot of lethargic and apathetic people out there that just don't think that their voice can be heard and their vote means anything. And, you know, we're here to let them know that you can change that.
Now, have you all in Bakersfield had any pressure at all from law enforcement, you know, to vacate where you are? Have any of you dealt with being arrested, or are you still being allowed to camp out, or are you not camping out anymore?
I'm glad you asked that, because I wanted to say that the Bakersfield Police Department is wonderful, exemplary. I wish every police department in the country were as good as ours. The one day we had 108 people was a big day. It was Global Occupy Day. We had a pretty mean-looking officer with a Tom Selleck mustache out there telling us, you know, he supported us, and if we need anything, go ahead and ask him. And we've had a lot of other police, you know, giving us that wave and smile and you know, really pumping us up. You know, when a police officer tells you we're doing good stuff and all of our signs are right on, it just creates a good feeling that keeps you going through the whole night, and that's all we've had so far. I haven't had any negativity from the Bakersfield Police Department or Highway Patrol at all. Just all good stuff, and we're loving it, and we invite them to come out there because they're 99% too.
What is your next big move there in Bakersfield?
you know, we just have more. We have more Global Occupy Days coming up in the days ahead. And, of course, I talked about the move to get people registered to vote.
Is it different from city to city as far as, I mean, I think you all have the same kind of goals, but is it different from city to city depending on the movement and depending on the locale?
Oh, definitely. Definitely very different from city to city. Whereas in a city like Los Angeles and New York, it took some camping out to get attention. Over in Bakersfield, I don't think camping out would be in our best interest. It would probably turn more people against us because it is kind of a Republican town, and there's a lot of poverty people who just are, like I said, are so lethargic. They wouldn't know what to think of it. You know, it might give us more of a negative name. So, yeah, we have to handle things differently in Bakersfield. But I think we're doing a pretty good job. I think we're getting through to people.
Tell me a little bit about the people who make up Occupy Bakersfield. Who are they?
Well, we got a really big mix. We've got some Hispanic and Black. Most people are employed. We've got some young people in there. We've got some a guy as young as 20. We've got some college graduates. We've got single mothers and married people who bring their children out. It's just a really different mix. And the great thing is everybody has like a same common goals and beliefs. So it's like no matter how different we are, we all still get along very well.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing with us. It gives us an insight of what Occupy Bakersfield is like and what you're trying to do. And Sam, we really appreciate you spending some time and sharing that information with us.
Thank you, Juanita. I appreciate it. And if anybody else wants to come out and join us, we're on the corner of Truxton Avenue and Chester Avenue. from 4 to 8 p.m. daily. Okay. So feel free to come on out.
Okay, thanks, Sam. Thanks for joining
us. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Occupy Fresno now. With us is Sam Joseph Hunter and Michael Dominguez. Both of you have told me a little bit about yourselves. Both of you are students. Would you say here in Fresno, is it a relatively young movement?
No, not at all. We have a very diverse population, and the spread, the age spread is enormous. We have students like us in their 20s, and we have people all the way up into their 60s.
Yeah, well over.
Well over 60s. We have a very wide and diverse population.
Would you say, too, just like in Bakersfield, you all are a relatively small group of people. You seem to be consistent, but a small, dedicated group. Is that how you would describe yourself?
I would say comparably, I suppose, to other occupations. Yeah, we would be small, but I think here in Fresno, the support and the presence has been overwhelmingly inspiring.
Here in Fresno, what is it that you are trying to get across to the public? You know, you all have camped out downtown. You have been arrested time and time again and told to move. But what is it with the movement here in Fresno? As we've heard in Bakersfield, he talks about in every city it's a little different. What is the message you are trying to get out here to the people? I mean, how are you trying to make it relevant to the people of Fresno?
Well, personally, and I think that others share the same viewpoint as I do, it's about dedication and awareness. We have a lot of problems in our society right now. We have a lot of problems in our government and the way that things are working with corporate America. And we need to be aware of what's going on. And a lot of it takes education and talking about the issues and hearing different people's stories and really understanding that you're not alone. And in order to fix any of these problems, we need to be able to talk about all these different problems. We need to be able to talk about them before we can go into a ballot box and make a real difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, for both of you, I'd really like to know what drew you to the movement. What made you decide, okay, I am going to stand up and I'm going to take a stand?
I think for me, while I was watching it unfold and then slowly move its way across the globe, across the nation, I wondered to myself if there was such a thing that was happening here in Fresno, and eventually looked up and saw that there was something. And I felt that it was a movement, a cause that I wanted to be a part of. I saw what they were speaking out against and what they were speaking for. And a lot of that spoke to me. All of this greed and it seems to be a great deal of selfishness when a society is indeed in need of people to interact and to bring together a community. So when that's not taking part, that's what we're doing here is trying to rebuild that, at least here in Fresno and I'm sure everywhere else.
For me, it was the income inequality that I saw. I saw some figures on income inequality and it kind of upset me to see that we're here in this economic time when so many people are trying so hard to make a difference in their families and their communities. But they're having troubles getting jobs. They're having troubles paying the bills. And it's not that they don't want to work. They want to work. So many people want to put in towards the community and do these things. But it's really hard when you're living paycheck to paycheck, you know, worrying whether you're going to keep your job. And at the same time, we've got individuals in our country who make you know, hundreds of multiples of what these hardworking Americans make. And, you know, I think it's great to see that people have profited and done well for themselves. But I also wonder, why can't we help out the people who are putting those people in those positions that have put them in their comfortable seats with all that money? It's a problem of greed to me. And I want to see that shift a little bit. I want to see more put back to the workers.
How do you think what you all are doing here in Fresno and the Occupy movement across the country, what kind of impact in the end, and when all is said and done, what do you want the impact to be?
I want to see more people power. I want to see more power given to people in the voting booths. I'm afraid that right now our democratic republic, our elected officials are not working in the interests of the people. And I think that that needs to change in order for people to be able to have what they've worked for.
Do you think this will get people thinking? And do you think in the end, you know, we're coming up on a big election year? I mean, and that, to me, that really kind of sums it up, whether or not if people feel the same way, if they agree, whether or not they turn out to vote.
I think that this has already made a huge impact on our country and our world. I think that people are already starting to talk about the issues, and it's inevitable that people are going to have more issues to talk about. They're going to have more talking points. They're going to understand better why they want to vote a certain way when they get into the ballot box next year. It's already made an impact, I think.
Yeah, certainly much of the dialogue has indeed already changed from the start of September 17th until now. There's been more mention and more discussion of income inequality and socioeconomic injustices on that part. But I think what's most important, of course important would be, but very much that the people become empowered and find the strength in their voice in gathering together. Because I firmly believe now that regardless of who is voted in, if the people are strong enough to gather together and speak their will to say that these are the things that we wish for our country, for our citizens, our fellow citizens, and these are things that we should work for. And if the people are truly listened to, if we are truly constituents to our elected officials, then they will enact the will of the people. However, that's not been the case for a very long time.
You know, here in Fresno, this group has been asked to disband, and you've been arrested, and you've been asked to move. Are you going to continue to try to occupy, or are you looking at the possibility of trying to move someplace else, or coming out every day and protesting?
I don't think that there's been much talk about moving. We have mentioned it, but I think that the fight that we're having right now is one of allowing ourselves to have our voices heard. And a lot of the occupiers here in Fresno feel like that's being squashed. It's being put down by law enforcement and the powers that be in our county. It'll probably continue to go on the way it has been until we finish up our legal business here. We have filed some lawsuits. It's something that we have an ongoing battle with right now. So probably won't see much change until that gets taken care of.
Do you think it takes away from what you're trying to do? You know, when you have this conflict going between those in the movement and law enforcement?
Not at all. I think that it kind of shows that we are making a difference, that somebody doesn't want us out there. There are other ways that we could deal with protesters being in the park. We have funds to take care of sanitation. Sanitation has not been an issue. We have funds to take care of that. We would love to do some park beautification. We would love to work with the county in order to work hand in hand. But the first response that we got was, get out. You can't do this here.
You know, let's hear from our listeners. I would really like to hear your opinion about this whole movement, Occupy, whether it's Fresno, Bakersfield, or wherever, and whether or not you think it will have an impact. You can give us a call at 800-224-8989 or 559-275-8989 or email us at talk@kvpr.org. And right now, Howard, how do you feel about this?
Well, I've actually gone down to Courthouse Park to see how they're conducting themselves and what's going on. And I was taken aback by the negativity and some of the publicity when I see the reality of what they're doing. I mean, one of the volunteers there, people there, was sweeping the sidewalk. They're very easy to talk with. And what's really outraging me is the county. The county's in a terrible financial bind. And if they simply grant them a camping permit so they could be there overnight, have a few tents to protect from the weather, set some restrictions in terms of keeping it clean, the sheriff would not be having to have, I think it was four or five deputies babysitting them 24/7. It's, to me, what's really outrageous is the county wasting all this money on people that are not violent, they're not harming other people, and they want to make a protest statement. That's a basic tenet of our democracy, is the ability to petition your government for grievances. And they're just really wasting tax dollars arresting these folks and babysitting them.
Well, thank you for your comment, Howard. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do you feel that even though your numbers are small, do you think there's a group of, I don't want to, you know, silent supporters out there that kind of support what you do, but they're not going to go out and, protest or camp out the way you all are?
I think certainly that's the case. I think what's been very, very inspiring is that very slowly people have trickled in who said that they've been watching from afar, who have been reading updates and checking online, watching the news, and in seeing people that have been there. Where are we at? 44 days thus far. And despite the threat of arrest, we are still organizing, coming together to build this community. And they've been themselves inspired to come down. One particular case is a gentleman that I got to meet there. His name's Mike. And he was telling me how, on watching the news updates, finally found some courage to become a part of the movement.
You know, I would also like to have Dr. Simone Weffner, sociologist with the School of Sciences at UC Merced, join us.
Hi, how are you?
I am just fine. I wanted you to join in the conversation like this. What do you think a movement like this has come to symbolize, or do you think it can't?
Well, I think it certainly can symbolize the struggle against income inequality, against the role of corporations in our government. But we have other larger, more historical issues at play as well. Certainly what we've seen at UC Berkeley is somewhat ironic, the birthplace of the free speech movement. We saw some of, in fact, the worst violence against protesters, certainly in California, at UC Berkeley. And, of course, everyone's seen what happened at UC Davis. And so on some level, this is a return to what we saw in the 60s and the 70s with students peacefully protesting. But much like the 60s, this is a much broader movement. If you look at the surveys of who's participating, 35 to 40% are over the age of 35, so it's not just the young and unemployed and students. Some of those with median incomes as high as $70,000 or $100,000 a year. So I think this shows that it's a broad movement around these issues of inequality, of the role of government, and subsequently we might be starting to see something also along the lines of what is the role of policing and protest and movements.
You know, like you said, this is something really that we haven't really seen since the 60s. So when you take a look at how long it's been where you've had this kind of movement and activity on college campuses, because I can recall not just a few years ago, they were talking about the apathy on college campuses and how students weren't involved at all and not engaged. And now we see this happening. What do you think went into all this, that now we're at a point where it looks like students, citizens are willing to take a stand on something they believe in?
Well, I think it's a little misleading in terms of media portrayal of protest and movements. Many of us scholars of social movements and protests argue we now live in a movement and protest society. We don't necessarily always take to the streets, but if you think about parents being involved in school-level decisions, the number of people that might show up to city council meetings to protest an action, if we think of some of the scandals and stories of late in the valley, issues of birth defects around the waste management plant, if we look at some issues like that, people are actually constantly mobilizing. The question becomes, is it actually newsworthy, and do we see it? That's one part. The second part is, I think, students are always in the middle of large-scale debates. Things like the pro-life, pro-choice movements that have been ongoing since Roe v. Wade have always had that component of student activism. And I think if you look at the dialogues occurring on many college campuses, there's a lot of mobilization by students. It's still not at the levels, if we start talking about the ballot box, we're not seeing 18 to 25-year-olds voting at the same rate as individuals over 35. But that's always been a historic trend, and we have seen blips and changes. Certainly the Obama election showed a massive increase in younger voters. The question then becomes, do they carry it through into subsequent ballot measures? And that's another issue, I think, unique to California. If you look at mobilization, people mobilize around ballot measures. You know, it wasn't too long ago we saw the fight over Prop 8, over 209, over 187, over the Knight Initiative before Prop 8. And so even though it seems like this is certainly a spike in higher than normal activity in terms of protest, but I think to say that it's been absent since the 60s or 70s is a bit misleading.
Well, you know, getting back to one of your other comments, speaking of what happened at UC Davis, it's my understanding that they're going to stage a protest Monday regarding this pepper spraying incident. And as you know, the chief of police at UC Davis has been placed on administrative leave. Now, across campuses in California, chancellors are expected to be getting together to figure out how to best deal with protesters. Does UC Merced have anything going on?
Yes, our students are preparing to mobilize, and I think they will be mobilizing around the conference call for the Regents meeting on the 28th. But also Chancellor Leland has come out with a very strong statement supporting protest and nonviolent protest. And I think that's an important first step. I think even though she's a new chancellor and only been on the ground since July 1, she understands the dynamics of the campus. And perhaps Katehi and also Bergino just don't understand the notions of protest mobilization and what that means and how to respond to it. When you authorize forcible removal, you know, if you're not clear with directions, those are the things that can happen. Now, we are a smaller campus, and I know, I mean, our students and the faculty know many of the police officers on campus, and so I suspect it will be far less contentious. I also suspect that anything that happens at UC Merced, we won't be bringing in massive numbers of Merced City Police or Merced County Police. One of the issues at places like Berkeley, at Davis, at other college campuses is what happens when university police trained to deal with students in particular are augmented or supplemented by county, state, troopers, etc., where that distinction might be a little different. Though what we did see at Davis was a UC police officer, UC Davis police officer. So, you know, that's not always – sensitivity training and dealing with students is not necessarily always remembered, as many of us that probably have to do online training for those sorts of things often forget.
Okay, Dr. Weaver, if you could just hang on. I'm going to pose a question to our other two guests. Now, you know, we haven't had that problem here, but what all are you guys trying to do to make sure that, you know, your confrontation, you know, stays nonviolent as far as continually being arrested by sheriff's deputies?
We make sure that when we do have to confront law enforcement here, we want to let them know that we want to cooperate as much as we can when we have to deal with those issues. So we don't lock arms. We don't offer any real resistance other than staying in place, staying where we're at, and standing in solidarity with each other and with some of the other Occupy movements. And they come, they put us in cuffs, and they walk us off. That's the way it usually works. And I think that it's been noted by them. They started showing up with, you know, 30 to 40 riot police or sheriffs in riot uniforms the first week, I want to say, of arrests. And they've started showing up with officers in just their regular uniforms, a little less show of force because they understand that we're peaceful, that we are not offering that type of resistance. And that's the kind of message that we want to show people, is that we're just here to tell you we're not leaving. This is our statement.
And I have one other thing. How do you feel about, you know, the professor talked a lot about how the media has portrayed the Occupy movement in general. But here, you two young men, when you're out there, how do you want to respond to people who say, you know, go do something with your life or go get a job or, you know, why are you out here wasting time? What do you say to that, to those kind of statements?
I think it's very – usually those times, particularly get a job, is very symptomatic of one who isn't perhaps in tune with all the issues. It seems very dismissive and not a case or a cause for understanding, when indeed most of us who are there at the occupation in Fresno have jobs or are full-time students, have things to tend to. And so we aren't able to maintain as much of a presence as we'd like, but we do keep our efforts on maintaining a 24-hour presence. But I think, you know, it is very dismissive and misleading with those who are spreading that that phrase around when there's no seek or cause to try to understand, because the issues that we're trying to work for or toward is not necessarily on a selfish note. It is something that is we want to enact for the entire society. So not just for ourselves, our family members, but for each other, for every community member, so that they can have prosperous opportunities that so many have been granted before and aren't necessarily available to nowadays.
Yeah, it was mentioned in a comment earlier by previous gentlemen that when he came down, he was taken aback by a lot of what he heard from the media because he saw what was really going on down in Courthouse Park. And I think that that's what a lot of the problem is that people listen to the media. They let somebody else tell them what's happening in these occupations, when really I think what people should do is take some time to go and meet with these people or go to their websites, do a little bit more research. See what's really happening and then form your own opinion. What Michael said is absolutely true. Most of us have things that we have to attend to during the day. We have families, we have jobs, we have school, we have volunteer work that we like to go and do. We're very busy individuals, and for us it's just another thing that we feel obligated to come out and do and make sure to have our voice in our democratic republic.
Okay. On that, we're going to have to wrap up this conversation. It's really been great hearing from both of you. And Professor Wefner, thank you so much for joining us as well from UC Merced. You really brought a lot to the conversation. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Well, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. There was a huge outcry when Fresno State proposed to eliminate the College of Science and Math. And last week, faculty in the CSU system staged a one-day strike over a number of issues, including student fee hikes and stall negotiations. Here to discuss this issue with us is Dr. Dennis Neff, Dean of Undergraduate Students, Associate Vice President of Academic Programs and Resources. He is also the co-chair of the task force looking at ways to cut costs at the university. Also joining us is Chris Cruz Boone, representative for faculty and a full-time lecturer at California State University in Bakersfield. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning, and thank you.
You know what? I would like to get a sense really from both of you, considering that for a lot of the public, you know, year after year, what we've heard about are just the, you know, the cuts going through the university system because of our budget situation at the state level. How would you describe the state of the California State University system right now, starting with Dr. Neff?
Well, as you know, the State of California has been systematically defunding higher education and forcing the burden of the cost of higher education to the students, with tuition increases to compensate for the reduction in state funding. I think we've done about as much as we can do on campuses to reduce inefficiencies, to try to find ways that we can continue to offer high-quality education to our students. We really need to increase funding from the state now to offset these cuts over the last few years. I think faculty are stretched to the limit. They've been asked to do a lot more than they've done before. From my perspective, we've about reached the limit of our ability to adapt.
And Professor Chris Cruz Boone, Cruz Broom?
I would agree with everything that was just said. As someone who's in a classroom, and I have colleagues, you know, we're grading hundreds of papers, whereas, you know, 2 years ago we may have had 100 students at what time. Now we all have, you know, 300 to 400 papers to grade at final time. One of the issues that's been important for us to point out to the public as the union is that although we have been cut by the state and we see a raise in fees for the students, larger classrooms, less access, we have an issue with the fact that since 08-09 and 09-10, Chancellor Reed has spent approximately $6 million towards equity raises on around 550 management employees. So we see money being funneled into management positions and executive positions instead of going into the classrooms where we feel both the students' tuition and tax dollars really should be spent.
You know, with that in mind, here at Fresno State, you know, there is a proposal to not only eliminate the College of Science and Math, but there's also a call for merging the College of Arts and Humanities with Social Sciences and, you know, cutting some of the courses, like, as my understanding, the physics department. What would that do to the university? I mean, when it comes to looking at what you need to do to try to stay, you know, financially solvent, Dr. Neff, why look at something so drastic here?
Well, we're not talking about elimination of any of these programs. What we're doing is looking at a reorganization administratively so that we can put some strong programs with other programs, try to increase synergies between those and actually improve the overall quality of the university. So we're not doing away with science. We're not doing away with math. We're moving parts of what are currently in our College of Science and Math into other institutional structures, other colleges, if you will. So we do have a proposal, and it's just that. It's a proposal at this point. We're asking for input from faculty, from students, from the public. We've got a proposal that would say, okay, let's take our physics, our computer science, our mathematics departments and team them with our engineering college, where a lot of those students are already taking those courses. We're proposing to take the departments of chemistry and biology and connect those with our College of Agricultural Sciences so that the sciences that are most important in the life sciences there and environmental science and putting those in with agriculture where we have a strong presence in the valley. So it's not like we're saying Fresno State's no longer going to have science and math. We believe that these proposals would actually strengthen our overall institution.
But would not it be – what about the students then? They would be enrolled in one of those other – and you know, I could be wrong about this, but they would be enrolled then in one of those other colleges, like either engineering or ag or whatever. But then if – and then have a major of like math or science. That's what I'm trying to figure out. How do you do that?
From a student's perspective, it's really transparent. Students don't enroll in colleges. They don't enroll in departments. They enroll in courses. Now, courses are obviously housed in departments, and departments are managed through colleges. But we would still have a biology department. Students taking biology would still take courses in biology with their faculty. Their faculty would still be doing research in biology. Same thing for chemistry. Same thing for physics. A student who is enrolled as a biology major would probably not perceive any real differences. The classrooms are still going to be the same. The courses of study are going to be delivered by faculty. The curriculum are going to be managed by the faculty. There's no change that way. When a student looks at their diploma, they're going to graduate from California State University Fresno just like they do now. They don't graduate from a department. They don't graduate from a college. Their transcript is no different. So from many perspectives, a student's perspective in particular, it probably wouldn't be any different. The faculty, we would hope with these new institutional arrangements, would start reaching out in other ways, and their research would become more multidisciplinary, if you will, with those disciplines that they're now more closely associated with.
Well, some are saying if you eliminate, you know, some of the departments at colleges, that means that you will need less deans, less administrators in those areas. And that would really be the goal there, is you would be able to cut staff.
That's true. The impact of a reorganization would be the elimination of a dean's position and a dean's office. It wouldn't go to the department level, however. What we're saying is departments would be moved around, but what we're proposing is the combination of one or two colleges so that the dean's office is no longer needed. Now, those people wouldn't necessarily disappear from the university initially because some of them are probably have retreat rights in departments, but that would initiate a process of reducing costs. But when 90%+ of your budget is in personnel, any reductions are going to affect personnel, unfortunately.
Professor?
Well, I was going to say one of the issues that we faced, we've done a lot of restructuring here at Cal State Bakersfield, which obviously is a much smaller campus than Fresno State, but our religious studies and philosophy department has been merged. Our anthropology department was absorbed by sociology. Now, one of the impacts of that was that a lot of our anthropology faculty that were more renowned jumped ship and took jobs at better institutions. Those faculty positions have not been replaced. So although those programs were not eliminated, because of the restructuring, it was no longer competitive for faculty to stay here. They thought their jobs were threatened, their research was threatened, their workload was increased, they were being undermined by having to share resources with another department. So now we have two faculty members in an anthropology department that used to be one of the strongest in the valley. So the program wasn't eliminated, but through restructuring, we lost faculty that, because of a hiring freeze, can't be replaced, and now that program has ceased to exist.
Wouldn't that, if what she's talking about and a lot of people have said, wouldn't that, in a way, make Fresno State less attractive to some of the professors out there who might would want to come? And then for a lot of students, you know, having a prestigious department or program, you know, is very important.
We would be concerned about that. We would hope that this proposed change wouldn't have that impact. But if, as we go out and have these hearings and we find out that that might be the case, then I think the provost is certainly going to take that into consideration.
Now, for us here locally, especially when we talk about, you know, math, science, and those areas, and you did mention, you know, the courses and the classes weren't going away, but wouldn't it hurt? Here we are in a region where there's been such a huge effort to increase enrollment in math and science, and not only that, to try to get more local people to go into the medical field because our shortage of doctors here, wouldn't that all have an impact on that?
We would hope not. Again, we're hoping that the faculty would still be here. The same faculty that we have now would continue in the future. Their outreach to the community would continue. They'd be civically engaged. They would be recruiting the students. We recognize this is a key issue in the Valley. We don't have the levels of scientific and mathematical reasoning and thinking that we would like to have. We know that incoming students to Fresno State, just over 50% of our students need remediation in mathematics to enter the university. So we recognize that's a problem, but we don't think that this would necessarily – we would hope that it would not impact the coming of the students into the university and to – the number of students who would graduate in science and math.
Where is university in this whole process? I know you have a task force and you're in the process. You've held some hearings. You're going to hold more?
There will be several more.
Okay.
The provost has received our recommendations. He is now in a listening mode where he is asking to hear from every interested group. He has met with all eight schools and colleges and the Henry Madden Library. He intends to meet with students on December 2nd, that's scheduled. He's going to meet with the department chairs on campus. He's also going to have an open forum. He has told us that he expects to bring us, the task force, back together in early January And based on what we are hearing, he's asking us to revisit our recommendations and then provide him with any modified recommendations that we might have to him. He would then take those to the Academic Senate, and he's indicated a decision point sometime in mid-March.
Mid-March. Well, in the midst of all this, and I'm sure, you know, Fresno State isn't the only campus looking at what it can do to cut costs, but the faculty, you had a one-day strike last week. What did you hope to accomplish with that, and what are your concerns at this point?
Well, I mean, there were three goals I really feel personally, and the first was to hopefully get Chancellor Reed's attention that the faculty are really fed up with being mistreated. The second was to hopefully draw some public conversation, which I'm so glad that you're having us on, about what's going on. And the third thing for me, you know, was to really, you know, not just a conversation overall about what's happening to the faculty, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, how there's been a mismanagement of funds. We continue to, you know, I went to a Board of Trustees meeting in Long Beach where at the same meeting they raised student fees and they gave a presidential increase to the incoming president at San Diego State. So, you know, there is this really contradictory attitude where, you know, well, we're being cut by the state, oh no, we have to raise tuition, but what they do with that money is hand it right over to the executives, to the presidents, to the chancellor and his management team, to his team of lawyers who've gotten raises. When the chancellor's lawyers are getting raises and the faculty who are actually mentoring, publishing, and teaching actual California and Central Valley students aren't getting raises, that's problematic.
You know, Dr. Neff, there's been a lot of discussion and a huge outcry because this has sort of happened in the past where the universities have had to face cuts. The students have had their tuition increased year after year, but then they would see the chancellors give themselves a raise. I mean, what kind of message does that send?
Well, it's problematic, and on our campus, we're really trying to make sure that the money gets into the classroom, it gets to the faculty. I think that's a key thing to recognize. We're trying to find ways that we can make sure that the student experience is not diminished any more than it absolutely has to be. But we recognize the role that our faculty play. One of the things that we're trying to work with some of our faculty on is figuring out how we can redesign courses so that they can be delivered in ways that take some of the burden off the faculty and also engage the students more effectively so that they are more successful. Let me just give one example. Our biology 10 course, which is the introductory biology course for all of our students, it has had a relatively high percentage of students who have not been succeeding. They get grades of D's or F's or they withdraw. And in the fall of 2010, that DFW rate was just about 40%. It was just under 40%, which meant that there were 249 students who were going to have to retake that class. And our faculty worked with some redesign principals. They got together. They said, okay, let's make these labs more engaging. Let's talk about things that the students are going to really use in their life. I asked them to say, okay, this is not the first biology class students will take. This is the last one. How would that affect how you teach the class if you knew that this is the very last course in biology a student would take? And they did do some redesign work. And in spring, the number of students fell from that 249 to 124 that got D's, F's, or W. Significant change. Now, we're hopeful that that's due to our redesign effort. It was just a one-semester data point. We'll look at it this fall. But the faculty are very pleased with what they've done. And it was in a way, it doesn't require them to do a whole lot more but do something differently. So we're trying to do that in other areas as well. Take some of the load off the faculty, engage the students, and improve the educational experience.
Now, Professor Cruz Boone, as well as you, Dr. Neff, do you all think that there is a way for the faculty and the administration at the various universities can kind of work together on these issues because it's affecting all of you?
And we're completely at a standstill right now. You know, the union met with the chancellor's office on Friday, and everyone, you know, had to walk away from the meeting because, you know, the chancellor is not willing to budge on the faculty's concerns, and the faculty are not willing to budge on defending the students and keeping workload down and making sure quality education is a priority, and that will continue to remain our priority. I mean, we're not going to budge on saying that, you know, the mission of the Cal State University is accessible education, and the chancellor, if the chancellor can't get on the same page with us about that, then we're going to continue to be at an impasse. So if we can all be at the same table, we would love that. But, you know, the priorities of the chancellor have been clear if you look at his spending habits, if you look at, you know, the statements that he makes publicly. And, you know, the fact that the advocacy that he continues to support is, you know, giving raises to presidents and supporting management and, you know, adversarial with the faculty, you know, that is not going to be something that we can ever all sit at the table in that kind of hostile environment and agree. The one thing we agree on is that education is important. And that the CSU is a gem in California. And, you know, as someone who is a product of the CSU system and a first-generation college student, you know, I believe in what I do, and that's why I do it. I could make more money doing something else, but that doesn't mean I won't stand up for myself, and I know I speak for a lot of other faculty when I say that.
You know, with the kind of situation we have here, you know, with the constant cuts and the tuition increases, I mean, will that not drive students who can afford it away from this system? I think we saw a lot of that last year. There are a lot of students who chose when the tuition went up. They looked at the cost and said, well, you know, I'll just go to private school. I mean, aren't we in danger of losing a certain group of students?
We probably are. When tuition raises from $3,100 a semester this year to somewhere close to $3,400 next year, there will be students who say, I'm going to go somewhere else. We hope that we can continue to provide a good quality product to those who come to our campus.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Dr. Dennis Neff and Professor Chris Cruz Boone, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate it. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. Well, we have often heard complaints that there is just too much litter, especially along our highways. People traveling through, that is the first impression for many. Well, there is a movement called Keep Bakersfield Beautiful that one of the volunteers is hoping to spread to Fresno. Joining us today is board member and volunteer John Enrique.
Well, good morning, Juanita. How are you this morning?
I am great. How are you?
Very, very well. It's a beautiful day in Santa Clarita. I work for the city of Santa Clarita, but I commute each and every day back into the valley there in Bakersfield.
You do?
Yes.
Wow, what a commute.
It's a long drive each and every day.
What brings you back? Is that where you work?
Well, Bakersfield's home. That's where I'm born and raised, and I have a fantastic job here in Santa Clarita, so I'm very fortunate.
Well, tell us about Beautify Bakersfield.
Well, it's a national program. We're under the program of Keep America Beautiful, and we're one of the affiliates, Keep Bakersfield Beautiful. And we also work with a state organization called Keep California Beautiful. And there's probably 1,000 communities throughout the United States that are engaged and active with Keep America Beautiful. And we've been an affiliate now with Keep America Beautiful for about 11 years in Bakersfield. We're under the City of Bakersfield Solid Waste Department. We have a coordinator, and there's 16 board members, and we're appointed by the city council and the mayor. And we promote beautification projects just about every week. We have a project going in Bakersfield.
Are you all volunteers?
We are all volunteers.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, I understand that you have been nationally recognized for your cleanup movement. Tell us about it.
Well, I've been very fortunate. We have a great team. One person can't do it all, but back in 2004, I was recognized as the Ironized Cody of the Year. It's a national honor that goes to one male in the United States who promotes volunteerism and beautification. And so I was just very fortunate to receive the award.
So what do you all do? You talk about beautifying the city, keeping it clean. Tell us just what do you do there?
Yeah, Juanita, it could be as simple as planting flowers in your neighborhood or a major undertaking working with Caltrans. And we just finished a project with Caltrans. We had a 5-year commitment with Caltrans, 05 to 10, and we actually planted 600 trees on Highway 99. And we raised about $21,000 to buy these trees, and we had about $23,000 in in-kind donations with 300 volunteers. And we pretty much would go out there almost every weekend to work on these trees. And what we did is on Make a Difference Day in October, we would plant anywhere from 50 to 100 trees at a time. But these trees need a lot of maintenance, so the volunteers would be out there on a weekly basis, hand-watering the trees if needed, checking the ties and the stakes and the irrigation. So it was a major commitment, but very successful. So we're happy that we were able to do that. And Caltrans was just a fantastic partner to work with.
Wow. How does the city of Bakersfield help in this?
Well, we're under the Solid Waste Department, and we have a coordinator that just, you know, coordinates these activities for us. But it's up to the volunteers and the board members to make things happen. We have a great staff with the city of Bakersfield that will go out and assist, but it's up to the volunteers to make these projects become a reality.
Now, is all of the Central Valley involved, or if not, how can they get involved?
I would love to see Fresno involved with the Keep America Beautiful program. It would be very, very helpful. I mean, I love Fresno. Fresno is a beautiful community, but like Bakersfield and any valley city on 99, it needs some attention. It needs some help. There's a lot of litter, a lot of trash, and we can coordinate and help those efforts. They teach us how to do this stuff as a volunteer to raise money and get the word out in the community through Keep America Beautiful. So I think it'd be a good partnership for Fresno. There is a website. It's called KAB.org. It's Keep America Beautiful. And they're out there. Also, Keep California Beautiful, KeepCaliforniaBeautiful.org. And you can also look at what we're doing in Bakersfield under KeepBakersfieldBeautiful.us.
Now, I understand your mayor of Bakersfield is receiving an award this week in New Orleans.
That's correct. He's also receiving the Iron Eyes Cody Award. So that's quite an honor for him. And Mayor Hall is one of those that leads by example. For instance, twice a month on Saturdays, he will coordinate efforts to go out and clean Highway 99 with volunteers. And the volunteers could be as many as 40 or 50, or sometimes we just have 10 or 15. It just depends on what people are doing that weekend. But Saturday we were out there, and we probably had 30 volunteers, and we did clean up along Highway 99 on some of the on and off ramps. And that's what it's really going to take. You know, Caltrans, we can point the finger at them all day long, but you know, they've had to cut their budget. You know, they've lost staffing, and they just don't have the resources. So we need to step in and get the community involved to participate and help and educate how important it is to keep our community clean.
Wow, that's great. I do hope it spreads here. I think it'd be a great opportunity for a lot of people. And I know there are a lot of people here who would love to be able to do that. We do that in a way on our own, but I don't know if we are as organized as you all are. So thanks a lot for the tips, and it was nice talking to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can also email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Cahuilla Delta Medical Center, and Kaiser Permanente.